All right, let's begin. So the Seder is on the horizon, obviously, and we want to get ourselves ready, as we all know. So I want to discuss a certain part of the Seder, but before we get to that, I just want to introduce what we want to do. So there's a mitzvah to remember leaving Mitzrayim daily. Twice a day is an obligation upon men to remember leaving Mitzrayim. It's incorporated into Shema. Now, the very last paragraph of Shema, it says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hoceichi Etzchem Eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. And that's how we fulfill this mitzvah daily, to remember leaving Mitzrayim. At the Seder, there's a mitzvah also to remember going out of Mitzrayim. At the Seder, there's a mitzvah of Magid, Migat Levincha, supposed to tell over the story of leaving Mitzrayim. And people ask the question, what's the difference? If I have an obligation to mention it every single night, then what makes Pesach night different? What makes this night so different? This is a famous distinction, which is really defined, I think, more by the Brisker Rav, Rav Yisrael Zev Soloveitchik, made from his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He says there's three differences between the nightly mitzvah of remembering leaving Mitzrayim to the mitzvah at the Seder. So what are these three differences? So the first difference, he says, is that at the Seder, you have an obligation to begin with the genus, to begin with the negative, and then lead into the positive. Messiah b'shvach, end with the positive. So on a regular night, you say, Hashem took me out of Egypt. That's it. You're done. You've done your mitzvah. At the Seder, there's an obligation that you're supposed to tell the story beginning with the bad parts and moving towards the good parts. Number two is that at the Seder, it's supposed to be in the form of questions and answers. We know the questions play a major part in the Seder, and that's really based on the way the Torah describes the mitzvah. Because in the Torah introduces the mitzvah with questions. Ki yishalcha bencha, when your son asks you, yomer lechem b'nechem, your kids say to you, it's always a response. There's a question, there's a response. So part of the mitzvah at the Seder is to have questions and answers. So manishtana is our most famous element of question and answer. But the truth is, throughout the whole Seder, the text in Haggadah does have in it built-in questions. Al shum ma, for what do we eat this? And many times we have questions. And the truth is, it's just supposed to be for us a sign to ask questions ourselves at the Seder. At the Seder, we're supposed to be asking questions as well. The third, thank you, Tzvichachma Omer, right, thank you, Tzvich. There's many places you have questions. And then the third difference is that on a regular night, you just mentioned left Mitzrayim. At the Seder, you're supposed to discuss the mitzvahs of the Seder, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. As we say in the famous section, the end of the Haggadah, or the end of Magid, that if you don't say these three things, you haven't done your mitzvah, you have to discuss the Karban Pesach, you have to discuss Matzah, you have to discuss Maror. So those are the three differences between the regular mitzvah to remember leaving Mitzrayim, which is on a daily basis, to the mitzvah of the Seder. Three major differences. The reason for these differences, so the first one, to begin with the genus, to begin with the negative and go to the positive. So seemingly, I think the idea is that you're supposed to feel much more emotionally attached to the Seder. You're supposed to be really, really re-experiencing it, as we know. You see yourself like you with Mitzrayim. So you develop much more of a hakara satov, a gratitude to Hashem, if you recognize where we came from and then where we ended up. If I just say, thank you for how you're taking me out of Egypt, so that's a nice thing. I thank Hashem. But if I describe, the slavery was terrible. It was torturous, day in and day out. They beat us up and they gave us do terrible jobs. They wasted our time. They tormented us. And then Hashem, you brought us out. So then there's a much deeper sense of gratitude because I've contrasted the bad with the good. The Gemara actually has two opinions as to what's the bad and the good in this story. So one opinion is what I just said, that the bad is that we were slaves, and the good is that we were free. The other opinion is that the bad is that we used to serve idols, and now we serve Hashem. So there's a spiritual bad and good, and a physical bad and good. And at the Seder, we do both. At the Seder, we say, Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves, and Hashem took us out. And number two, we say that we used to serve idols, and now we serve Hashem. They're both in the text of the Haggadah. But the point being, if I'm able to relate to the story, in contrasting where I was to where I am, and that's a much deeper sense of gratitude and a much more emotional connection than it would be if I just said, thank you, Hashem, for making me free, which itself is important, but we have to be able to say the entire story through. The second point we made, there's supposed to be questions and answers. So the idea of questions and answers is that you should be very engaged in the discussion. The Maharal says when you ask a question, that means you've developed in yourself a spot for the answer to click in. I mean, if someone just throws information at me, if I just start lecturing, and no one's interested, so it just goes either over your head or in one ear or the other, but it doesn't go anywhere. If people are curious about the information, if there's questions which are being asked, topics they're interested in discussing, so then now there's a place in you to receive the answer. So at the Seder, you're supposed to be developing a connection to the material. You're supposed to be emotionally engaged. So there's this imperative to make questions and answers so that we feel that, you know, we can receive the information properly. I'm interested, I'm engaged, this the topic here is important, relevant to me, therefore I ask. If it's not relevant to me, I don't ask questions. When it's relevant to me, I ask questions because I'm interested in knowing the answer. So that's the idea of Shiloh and Tshuva, of questions and answers. And the third point is what I want to focus on today. The third point is that you're supposed to discuss Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. You're supposed to mention the mitzvos and discuss their meaning. So this one's a little hard to understand. Why is that so essential to the Haggadah? It seems to be there's the idea of telling a story, which itself is a mitzvah. Then there's the idea of performing other mitzvos, like eating matzah and eating maror. Why is it so essential that we discuss at our Seder Pesach, Matzah, and Maror? As we see, there's something very, very essential about that section of the Haggadah, and which needs more discussion. So let's flip there in these next Los Haggadahs. It's on page
22,
thank you. Page 22. So page 22, it quotes the famous statement of Rabbi Gamliel from the Mishnah. I'll speak the English, I guess, to make it easier, but we'll have to edit the translation when we need to. But the Rabbi Gamliel would say that those who do not make mention of three things at the Passover feast have not done their duty, namely Paschal sacrifice, the Karban Pesach, the matzah, and the maror, the bitter herbs. I'm not sure why they translate maror as bitter herbs, because we're not eating herbs, we're eating vegetables usually. I'm not sure, but that's the classic translation of maror, but I have no clue why that is, because whether you're eating horseradish, whether you're eating lettuce, I don't know if those are called herbs versus vegetables. But the word maror just means some sort of bitter vegetation, I guess. I don't know. But anyways, the classic translation is bitter herbs. So the Rabbi Gamliel tells us, this is the Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, he tells us that if you haven't mentioned these three things, you haven't done their duty. So the question is, what is the duty which he's talking about? Which duty have we not done? That itself is a machlokas. There's a debate about that. One opinion is that the duty he's discussing is that you haven't actually performed the mitzvah properly. I mean, if you ate matzah but didn't discuss the meaning of matzah, you haven't done your mitzvah of matzah. If you ate maror and didn't discuss the meaning, you haven't done your mitzvah of maror. I mean, according to this opinion, this is not a part of the story of leaving Mitzrayim. This is a part which is relevant to the mitzvah you're about to perform. Now, at the Seder, you're approaching eating the matzah. You have to discuss what the matzah means, and then eat it. Discuss what the maror means, and then eat it. If you don't understand what they mean, you haven't done your mitzvah fully. That's one approach to this. What's interesting about that is that we don't have this concept with most mitzvahs. It's always nice to understand the idea of a mitzvah, like we do in our class all the time. We talk about the mitzvahs. But in terms of your performance, your obligation of a mitzvah, if I take the lulav, and I have no idea what it means, it's totally fine. I've done my mitzvah, I'm yotze, I've done it perfectly. It's nice to understand what it means. You connect more that way, it's more meaningful to you. But there's no imperative that you must know what it means to take your lulav. If you give tzedakah, you may not know the purpose of tzedakah, but you gave the tzedakah, you did your mitzvah. If a man puts on tefillin, he doesn't know what tefillin needs to know, just puts on tefillin, he's done his mitzvah. But yet, when it comes to this idea of the matzah, there's this concept, maror and karban pesach, this concept, just know what it means in order to fulfill the mitzvah, which is interesting, it's unique. As an aside, there are three mitzvahs the Torah says in the actual context what you're supposed to think as you do them. The mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, it says that everyone should know that I put the Jews in sukkahs when they were in the desert. It says about tzitzis, l'man tizkru, you should know and remember all the mitzvos. It says about tefillin, that the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth. So there's those three mitzvos where there are opinions that say you must know what they mean as you do them. But that's 3 out of 613. The other 610 don't require this. But yet Rabbi Gamliel tells us that...
What was the third one?
Tzitzis. Tefillin, tzitzis, and sukkah.
Tefillin.
Yeah, those three.
Okay.
But Rabbi Gamliel tells us that when it comes to these mitzvahs, this is according to this opinion, you must know what they mean in order so that you can fulfill the mitzvah properly. So that's one concept. That's one opinion of what Rabbi Gamliel means over here. The second opinion is that what he means, that you haven't done your mitzvah of telling the story if you haven't explained what these mitzvahs mean. So I'm telling the story of leaving Egypt, and we mentioned matzah. I must explain the concept of matzah as part of my story. So even though in our minds, I mean, the Torah stresses the matzah a lot, but in our minds, matzah is kind of like a side point. You know, the story is about the 10 plagues and about the servitude and about leaving and the freedom. Happened to be as they left, they ate matzah. Moror is something which is supposed to kind of remind us of what happened, but it's not central to the story. But yet, according to this opinion, the story requires us to explain these mitzvos to tell the story. And that's also funny why that would be. It's very unique. So what's the source of this? Now, why is it, where do we find in the Torah that there's this, you know, this stress on explaining the meaning of these mitzvos to tell the story? So very simply, the actual pasuk of the Torah that gives us the mitzvah of telling the story is "V'igad to levincha b'yimhu lemor." You should tell over to your son on that day, saying, "Bavur ze," because of this, "Asa Hashem li," Hashem performed, let's say, miracles for me, "but says Mitzrayim," when I left Egypt. So the Gemara points out the words "Bavur ze," because of this, and the question is, what's the this? What's the this that we're stressing? And Haggadah tells us. You don't have to flip your pages, but we'll go back to the other section in a second. But Haggadah does tell us, Bavur Zeh means the time when the matzah and the maror are placed before you. It means Zeh is this. When the Torah says Zeh, you point at something. Every single time you find the word Zeh in the Torah, Rashi usually tells you that you're pointing at something in front of your face. So when you're telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it says you tell your children because of this, the rabbis teach us it means, you know, because of this matzah and maror that's in front of me right now, I left Mitzrayim. So there's this concept that should be in front of you. It's munachim lefanecha. It's placed before you as you tell the story. So what's the idea here? And additionally, there's another point. One term we use for matzah is lechem oni, which usually we describe as the bread of affliction or the poor man's bread. But the rabbis have another interpretation of lechem oni. And they say lechem oni can come from the word oneh, to respond or to recite. And they say that matzah is the bread upon which you recite Dvarim Harbe, many, many things. That's why we, in the Seder, we uncover the matzah. Now, you're supposed to have it on the table uncovered during most of the Seder because it's lechem oni. You're supposed to recite the Haggadah over the matzah. So there is this emphasis that you're supposed to have the matzah and maror in front of you as you speak, and that becomes kind of part of your story. So you can look at it as maybe like a conversation piece or something. Like, you know, it kind of starts the conversation. Hey, what's that over there? A matzah. You know what happened with matzah? You know, why is the maror over there? And you kind of talk about it, which is part of it. You know, anything of the Seder to get us engaged and interested is very, very important. Essentially, the Seder plate is that. You know, the Seder plate has all these different symbols on it because they're supposed to kind of spark discussion. You're supposed to look at it and say, hey, what's that mean? Why is that there? What does that symbolize for us? And the Seder plate is there on the table during the Seder. To get us focused and get us going. Essentially, we could have just said, okay, when I need the maror, I'll bring it out. When I need the matzah, I'll bring it out. But yet, we have this idea to leave it in front of us during the entire Seder because we're supposed to be focused on it and speaking about it. So that's one idea of having it in front of us. The Seder is not just talking. It's supposed to be like a full-body experience. So there's sights, there's tastes, there's talking, there's everything there. Smells, and everything's part of the Seder. And the idea is because since we're supposed to be so engaged in the story, we don't just talk. It's not just discussion, but we actually look and we feel and we taste because we're bringing our entire bodies, you know, into the message of the Seder. Rav Moshe Sternbach in his Haggadah, was called Tam V'Das. So he says there's an important message that you could take of having the matzah and maror in front of you during the Seder. He says that when it comes to education, whether it be chinuch of children, of students, or ourselves, you always have to not just talk, but do. You can't be all talk. You know, when you're trying to get a message across to somebody, you have to put your money where your mouth is, as they say. So if we just sat down and we discussed the importance of matzah, but it wasn't there on the table to eat, so we'd be lacking in our message to our children, to ourselves. Because we're saying, okay, we can discuss things as concepts, but we want to see that you're actually doing, you know, practice as you preach. You know, you do as you're speaking. So he says that putting these things on the table in front of us during the Haggadah, it shows that we don't just speak about mitzvahs, we do mitzvahs. We don't just speak about Hashem and His Hashkacha, we actually perform in our lives based on that. We do them. At the very end of the Haggadah, the beginning of Nirtza, you know, as the Haggadah comes to a conclusion, to a close, so we say the beautiful piyut of Chasal Sidur Pesach, that the Pesach service has completed. And we say there, Kasher Zechinu L'Sader Oso, just as we've merited to arrange the Seder, Kein Nizke L'Asoso, so too we should merit to perform it. So I think the simple understanding is that we should merit to perform next year's Seder. You know, we've done this year's Seder, we should merit next year's Seder. But you could say it means that just as we prepared our Seder and had our great discussions, maybe zilcha, maybe merit to actually perform based on the Seder. So we take all the ideas we discussed, everything that we gained from our Seder, and we say, Hashem, let's not leave it just as discussion, and let's take the ideas and act upon them. And after Pesach, the goal is not just to say, oh, what a nice Seder, and the goal is, hopefully it's a nice Seder, but the goal is to say that I want to take what I learned the Seder and improve and enhance my life with it, serve Hashem better because of it. So we say, Kein nizkei la'asosam, and we merit ourselves to perform that which we learned at the Seder. There's one additional point of having the matzah and maror in front of you. I saw this idea in the Haggadah of Rav Avram Shor called Lekach Ve'alibuf. And he says that you have the matzah on the table throughout the Seder. And we know there's a concept called Mar Belasaper. The more you discuss the story of Leave Mitzrayim, Harezim Meshubach, that's praiseworthy. That's one of the first things we say in the Haggadah. The longer you discuss the mitzvah, the story, the better. So the question is, what does it mean that this is praiseworthy? So he actually says an idea, more of a Hasidic type idea, but it's a very beautiful idea. Now he says the matzah is sitting there on the table as you speak. And that's the idea. You're supposed to have the matzah uncovered during the Seder. So you sit there with your family, with whoever's at your table, and you discuss these ideas as the matzah is sitting in front of you. The matzah is there kind of listening. The matzah is taking it in. It's lechem she'onim l'dor harbe. It's the bread upon which you recite many things. That's the way the Torah describes it. So as the matzah absorbs all that we say, he says, you know, the quality of the matzah is enhanced. Meaning the deeper and the more inspiring my Seder is, my discussion is, the more purity, the more holiness is inside my matzah. And my matzah actually improves based on the Seder. So if the Seder is very, very, you know, very superficial, the Seder is that nothing much happens, and we race through it and we get there. So the matzah also is just a matzah. It doesn't get that enhanced matzah, you know, purity, holiness. But if the Seder is an inspiring discussion, and the Seder is something which, you know, we take advantage of. So as we grow from the Seder, the matzah itself becomes more holy, the matzah itself becomes more pure, and then you eat that matzah, and the experience of the matzah is very, very different. So he says, "Arez zem meshubach," this is praiseworthy. It doesn't mean the discussion, it means the matzah is more praiseworthy. The matzah becomes more praiseworthy as you discuss at your Seder the ideas of Leave Mitzrayim. So the matzah is there, and the truth is, I've thought about this idea before, that the matzah is kind of absorbing everything we say. So if the goal of the Seder is to take all the ideas we discussed and make them part of our lives. So eating that matzah really is very much a real-life symbolism of this. Because why? You are what you eat. And if the matzah has sat there and absorbed everything you spoke about, and then you take the matzah and you put it into your body, so now all the ideas, it's showing all the ideas should become part of who you are. You know, they become part of your bones. They become part of your blood. You know, they pump through your veins. That's the symbolism of eating the matzah. So the matzah is there on the table, and the matzah represents many things. The matzah listens to your discussion, absorbs it all, and then you take the matzah and you ingest it into your body, and suddenly your body now is pumping with all the ideas you had at the Seder, and that's at least symbolically what we're trying to do. We're trying to take these ideas and make them real to us. So I think these are all concepts of having the matzah and the mar in front of us, you know, as we have our Seder. Now to discuss this part of the Haggadah, and I'm going to go into this part in particular. You could call these three things, let's call them, you know, they're the trifecta, the triple crown. Matzah, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. You know, these things are important, they go together. Without them, the Seder is incomplete. So, let's discuss what each one represents, how the Haggadah describes them, and we can gain from it. So, the first thing is Pesach. So, let's go on page 23. We'll read the translation. The Paschal lamb, which our ancestors ate during the existence of the temple. Why was it eaten? Because the blessed omnipresent, Hashem, passed over the houses of our ancestors in Egypt, as it says, you will say, it is a sacrifice of the Passover to the Eternal who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when God struck the Egyptians and spared our houses. And the people bowed down and worshipped. So the translation, I think, is a little bit inaccurate, but it's close enough. Pesach, so the Haggadah tells us the Pesach symbolizes the fact that Hashem skipped over our houses in Egypt when he killed the firstborns of the Egyptians. So the word Pesach itself, we know the English Passover comes from that word. Hashem skipped over our houses, he passed over them. People don't realize that Rashi actually has another translation of that word as well. Rashi says that Pesach may mean mercy. Hashem mercy upon us. So if we had gone with that translation, we'd say that we're celebrating mercy next week instead of Passover. You can imagine that the giant will have mercy sales and things like that. So I guess Passover has been the translation we've taken on in general. But Rashi says there's two possible meanings of that word. It could mean Passover, or it could mean mercy. So the idea of Pasach, that Hashem skipped over us in Mitzrayim, it attests to the unique relationship of Hashem to the Jewish people. Meaning Hashem was bringing about a plague on the entire land, and there was special treatment given to us. Now we could ask the question, that was true with all the plagues, why are we focusing on the 10th plague, that we can discuss a different time. But the Torah tells us in the 10th plague, there was this focus on the fact that Hashem skipped over us, gave us this special unique treatment, had mercy upon us, and punished our enemies. So I would say the Korban Pesach speaks to the special status of a Jew relative to the rest of the world. We have to be proud of who we are, to be proud of our relationship to Hashem, and proud of our special treatment. The Korban Pesach, I've heard described before, is in some way like a membership card to the Jewish people. Every single Jew had to participate. A goy was not allowed to participate. You know, goyim were allowed to bring karbanos in general. They could bring sacrifices. But the Korban Pesach was off limits in a much more serious way to goyim than other things. The Gemara tells a story of a non-Jew who tried to trick the rabbis and eat from the Korban Pesach. So one year he showed up to the Beis HaMikdash, pretended he was a Jew, and he got to eat some. And no one knew. He went back home and he bragged to the rabbi of his town. You know, it says that no non-Jew can eat from your Korban. Well, I ate from it last year. So the rabbi told him, this is Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. He told him, he said, you know, the Jews don't really believe you anyways. Why? Because next year, they gave you the lousiest part of the meat. Next year, go back and ask for a piece of the tail. So next year, he goes back to Yerushalayim. And he says, I want to, you know, give me a piece of the tail. I want the best part. Why are you giving me the worst parts of the meat? I'm your fellow Jew, right? I deserve this part as well. So they said, well, who told you to ask for this for the piece of the tail? He said, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra told me. So they knew that something's fishy here, because the tail was the part that was burnt on the Mizbeach, that wasn't eaten. Mm-hmm. And if Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra said, ask for the tail, they could tell something was up. So they checked into it, and they found out he was non-Jewish, and they executed him. That was the story. But we look at it as a very, very exclusive sacrifice, the Korban Pesach. And this is the connection of us to Hashem. This is the unique status of a Jew. This is the one time in the year that every single Jew, man, woman, and child, appeared in the Beis HaMikdash. Everyone had to partake of the Korban Pesach. Everyone had to be there. So this is a part of who we are. It's also rejection of idolatry. The Korban Pesach was supposed to be, you know, the Egyptians worshipped the lamb. They worshipped livestock. And by taking a lamb and slaughtering it as a korban, that was the miracle of Shabbos HaGadol, that they didn't come and kill us and we killed their gods. But yet, this was supposed to be a total rejection of idolatry, and we're supposed to be totally focused on Hashem as one. So that's the message of the Korban Pesach. So it's our unique status as Jews, our unique relationship to Hashem, and it's supposed to represent the way Hashem treats us different than other nations. The next paragraph is matzah. So the Haggadah says, this matzah which we now eat, what does it mean? It is eaten because the dough of our ancestors did not have time to become leavened before the supreme monarch of monarchs, the blessed most holy one, was revealed to them and redeemed them. As it said, they baked the dough which they had brought out of Egypt into matzahs which were not leavened because our ancestors were thrust from Egypt and could not take the time to make proper provisions for themselves. So simply matzah, we know we had to rush out of Egypt as the Torah describes, and we didn't have time to bake our bread, to have our bread rise. That's the famous idea. But the way that Gadda describes it is a little bit more particular. The Gadda says, Shulhistik Basikam Shosil Hachmitz, that we don't have enough time to have our bread rise before Hashem revealed himself to us. It wasn't Paro driving us out so quickly. It was Hashem driving us out so quickly. Now, we had to rush out because Hashem came and redeemed us at a moment's notice. So, I mean, that itself deserves its own discussion in the Torah as to where you see this rush and why they had to rush. That's not always so clear in the description of the Torah itself. They certainly rushed. The question is why. But the God is stressing to us this idea of the rush out. And what it means is that the redemption happened quickly. Redemption happened suddenly, as it were. We were unworthy in our state that we were in. And Hashem just came in and appeared and said, I'm taking you out. You're out of here. And Hashem pulled us out of Mitzrayim.
Yeah. Weren't there 3 days before that they had an idea that they were going to be leaving?
So they had the idea. They were told to take the Korban Pesach, you know, really 4 days before. Before they left. But it seems that they didn't know exactly. They knew they were eating their Korban. They should be ready to go.
Yeah.
But we're still describing that it kind of happened in a moment's notice. So your question is a good question. I don't have an answer to it. Saying the Torah itself, it's confusing. The Torah itself, on one hand, they had notice. On the other hand, they rushed out. So you have to understand what the Torah is describing through that. But the gut is stressing that rush. The gut is stressing, but the rush is not because Paro said, get out of here. The rush is because Hashem came to us and said, you got to go. Hashem revealed himself to us, and we had to race out. So there's a famous concept, the Or HaChaim says it, it's a Kabbalistic concept, we can discuss it in different ways as well, that the Jews were on the 49 levels of Tumah of impurity, they were almost at a very an irredeemable state. They're almost past the point of redemption, meaning that they had sunk so low, had Hashem waited even a moment more, they would have been deemed, you know, irredeemable, because they sunk so low. No longer children that deserve to at least even fulfill the covenant made with the Avos. Just totally gone, off the charts. And at that moment, Hashem waited for that moment. The moment almost came. And at that moment, he said, okay, we got to get out of here fast. And they rushed out. So this is a concept quoted in the Or HaChaim. But the truth is, you don't have to say it as a Kabbalistic idea. I mean, the Rambam says it. The Rambam says that we had sunk so low, we almost cut off entirely our link to the Avos and Imahos. So it was totally gone. I mean, the whole merit we had to be saved from Mitzrayim, it wasn't our own merit. We didn't deserve to be saved. We were also idolatrous at the time, and we had a lot of things going against us. The reason we were saved is because of Hashem's promise to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that your children are going to, especially to Avraham in particular, their children are going to be saved from those who torment them and become a great nation. But the Rambam says, you know, we were at our last threads. Kimat kut, he says, is almost totally cut off that connection. You know, those gains made by the Avos were almost totally lost. And there was a precision in Hashem saving us. So I think what we're focusing on here is it's not the rush, but it's the precision. I mean, Hashem's providence, Hashkacha of Hashem, is, you know, right on the dot. You know, Hashem doesn't approximate things. When Hashem says you should be slaves, you should be slaves. When Hashem says you should be free, you should be free. And it's not going to be like, okay, I'll take you out sometime. Hashem had a plan. There was an exactitude in what happened. And it really speaks very much to Hashem's divine providence, to Hashkacha. Matzah is called the bread of Emunah in the Zohar, because a matzah is imbued with this idea that we have faith in Hashem, that Hashem runs the world, runs our lives, and Hashem's Hashkacha works in exact and precise ways. So I think that's a message you could take from this. The fact that it says that our dough didn't have time to rise before Hashem pulled us out, that rush, you know, that imperative to get out right away is because Hashkacha had it, that was the moment. So it was precise, it was deemed appropriate at that time, and we were taken at that time. So I would say the matzah, we always say represents freedom, but I think more than freedom, matzah represents the idea that Hashem's control over the world is calculated and precise at all times. There's also this focus that Hashem himself freed us. And the Haggadah stresses many times, it was myself and not an angel, myself and not a saraf, you know, it was Hashem himself. And we also recite that here, because there's Nigla Lam, that Hashem revealed himself to them. It wasn't through any other forces, it was totally Hashem himself. So just to describe, you know, this a little idea what that means. It's hard for us to know what it means, Hashem doing it versus an angel. We don't really understand these concepts so well. But just as a mashal, there's a mashal given, an analogy given by Rav Itzla Petterberger, who was one of the students of Rav Yisrael Salanter, one of the great Bali Musar. And he was speaking about a pasuk. It says, Rachatz Hashem, Hashem washed off Soas Bas Zion, you know, the filth, the excrement of the daughter of Zion. So it's describing Hashem cleaning us off, you know, from our filth. And he says, why is the focus on Hashem doing that? And, you know, many of us can relate to this very, very well. Sometimes a child will get so messy that no one will clean the child besides the mother. You know, like if the child's a little messy, okay, maybe like the babysitter or a sibling or the father will get involved. Sometimes you say, mommy, quick, come, you know, you need to get mommy to come in. So sometimes the Klai Yisrael is at such a low state that the only person, kevyochel, that can come and cleanse us is Hashem himself, our Father in heaven. Only Hashem can do it. So, you know, we'd reached such a low state that the angel said, we're not getting involved in this. And no one would step in and take care of us besides our loving Father, Hashem. The same way that the Rav Itzel Petterberger says, you know, that Hashem had to wash off the filth, the excrement of Klal Yisrael, that's happened in Mitzrayim as well. So matzah is this idea that we'd sunk so low, but there's a precision, Hashem doing it the right way, the right time, and that's his Hashkacha. Then we move on to the third thing, which is maror. So the bitter herb which we eat, what does it mean? It's eaten because the Egyptians embittered the lives of our ancestors in Egypt, as it said. They embittered their lives with hard enslavement, forcing them to work with mortar and bricks, and to carry out all kinds of work in the field. All the labor was harsh. So it was very, very difficult, backbreaking labor. So Mara is going to represent the bitter times, the slavery. That's Mara. Now the question is always asked, what is it, now why is it that we want to remember the bad times? We're here at the Seder celebrating our freedom. And we just ate our Karam Pesach, and we discussed our matzah, which talks about freedom and Hashem's love for us. Why are we dwelling on the difficult times of the past? We don't want to be brought to sadness. We don't want to worry about what was. We want to be able to celebrate our freedom and celebrate the good times. But as we said before, part of this is to bring us to more gratitude to Hashem. When you remember the tough times, you see where you are right now, and that brings you to a much deeper, a deeper sense of gratitude than if you ignore all the tough times from before. So one simple meaning is that we're always trying to contrast what was and what is, so we know how difficult things were and how good things are now. Furthermore, now Mara is the last thing mentioned. I mean, we mentioned Pesach, Matzah, and then Mara. Historically, the first thing was the Mara, meaning that the enslavement happened before the freedom. The Karm Pesach was the last thing on the list. So why do we mention Mara last? And I think it's very important to understand that Mara has to be understood only within context. Meaning that without the context of Pesach and Matzah, if I don't understand that Hashem treats Klal Yisrael in a very special manner, and I understand that Hashkacha runs the world, so then Mara is going to lead me to the wrong conclusions. Then I look at the slavery and I say, oh, that was just terrible, horrible, and awful. I gain nothing from it. But the truth is, you know, our Hashkacha is always that the difficult times are for a purpose or help us grow. There's a reason for the difficult times. So once you've understood what Pesach means, that Hashem cares for Klal Yisrael in a unique way, then you understand Matzah, that Hashem has Hashkacha, and that things are always calculated and precise in the way the world functions. So then finally you say, Marer, now I can understand the bitter times. Now once I understand that Hashem runs the world, that everything is there for a reason, I can understand difficulties. And the Mishnah Berurah says that some have the custom to kiss their Marer before they eat it. Matzah as well.
No,
kiss the Marer. I mean, very similar in that people will kiss their tefillin, kiss a Torah scroll. So the Marer is a mitzvah object, and so is the matzah, so you kiss it. But it's funny, because the Marer is supposed to represent the bad times. You're kissing the bad times? Like, how do we understand that type of a gesture? But the answer is very simple. You know, it's Marer supposed to lead us to understand that the bad times themselves are also for our own good. That's the Marer supposed to help us understand. So it's the last thing on the list, because you put it into context. Halachically, the Torah obligation of eating Marer is only alongside the Karban Pesach. Nowadays, Marer is a rabbinic obligation. Matzah nowadays is from the Torah. Matzah exists by itself. Marer, according to the Torah, only exists with the Karban. So we eat it nowadays rabbinically to remember the original Marer. But Marer right now is not a Torah obligation. And one reason being is because Marer can't exist by itself. Marer by itself is just going to lead us to bad thoughts, to think that Hashem just leaves the world as is and bad things happen. The Marer is only an obligation with the Karam Pesach, because once you know that Hashem runs the world in a very, very precise manner, and Hashem cares for Klal Yisrael, the Marer fits into that context. The Marer has to have a context, or else Marer is going to mislead us. So according to the Torah, you only eat Marer with the Karam Pesach. The rabbis said, well, nowadays there's a Karban, and we want you to forget about the mitzvah of Marer, because it's been 2,000 years and we haven't had a Karam Pesach, so you have to eat Marer anyways. It's a mitzvah, the rabbinic mitzvah to eat Marer. But Marer really is supposed to teach us this lesson. Many is explained further, as the Sfasemis says, as others say it as well. The one positive gain that we get, you know, for better or for worse, you know, from the difficult times, is that when the Jews do have these difficult times together, it creates a bond amongst Jews, and it stops them from assimilation. Meaning that, you know, when Jews were forced into ghettos, and Jews were picked out and tormented and tortured, so even though they had to suffer terribly, but they didn't assimilate into the surrounding nations. When we're in exile, and nations around us accept us, that's where assimilation occurs, as we see in America nowadays. When things were difficult with the surrounding nations, people did not assimilate, they stuck together. Either by force or by choice, but they stuck together. We say, b'chol dor v'ador, in every single generation, they stand up to destroy us, and Hashem saves us. So many discuss that line of the Haggadah, and the Hisha Amda, that this has stood for us to keep us alive. So the question is always asked, what's the this? The Hisha Amda, what is the Vihi? So many describe, and the simple understanding is that it was the covenant made between Hashem and Avram Avinu, and that covenant maintains us. But it could be said the Vihi is the very fact they try to destroy us that keeps us together. That the glue amongst Jews, unfortunately at times, has to be that we suffer together and we go through tough times together. We'd rather the glue be something more positive, but just the nature of history and of Klal Yisrael has been that the tough times bring us together. We've all experienced it, even in our own lifetimes, even recently. You know, when there's national tragedies which occur, Jews bond together as one, and then we become proud Jews based on these tragedies. There's times it's more extreme, less extreme. You know, during the Holocaust, you know, Jews, no matter who they were, banded together. Religious, not religious, strangers, friends, family, we're all one, we're in it together, we look out for each other, we care about each other. That's who we were, and that's who we are. So there is a certain benefit to the bitter times. This is something that Sfas explains in others, that it keeps us together as one, and so we don't assimilate into the other nations. There are benefits as well. That's just one thing pointed out. So there's no mitzvah of maror according to the Torah without a karban, but there is matzah. So I understand a little bit better how the three things kind of fit together as one. Because we have these three things, we call them the triple crown. There's the trifecta of things that are seder. So how are they all linked together? So the Maral explains the following point. The Maral says that the karban Pesach, one thing it symbolizes is unity. Whether it be unity of Hashem, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, or the unity of the Jews. It symbolizes unity. Why is that? So number one, it was cooked, it had to be roasted whole. It wasn't cut up in pieces, it was roasted whole. He says it was roasted and not boiled. You know, when you boil meat, it shrivels, it becomes pieces, it shrivels into pieces, breaks into pieces. When you roast meat, it becomes one solid mass. So when things are boiled in water, usually they break apart. So it's roasted whole, and it's roasted, not boiled. And then there's a mitzvah to eat it in groups. We have to eat it, and you're supposed to bond together in groups to eat it as one. And you stay inside the house, so you can't leave the house while you're eating it. Because you have to. It's all the idea of unity, being together in one. You're within the walls together with your group, eating a whole karban, which is one. So number one is supposed to dispel any ideas of idolatry. You know, Hashem is one, and therefore this karban is represents the idea of one. It also speaks to the unity of Klal Yisrael. But that's the Karban Pesach. But when you're focused on Hashem being one, if the Karban Pesach tells you Hashem is one, and we ignore idolatry, so Hashem is one means that when Hashem runs the world, it's always his one purpose, to bring the world to a certain goal. And that purpose might involve matzah, and might involve maror. The matzah symbolizes the good times, the freedom, the miracles. Maror presents the difficult times, the gullus, exile, and we have to recognize these are all for our benefit. So under the rubric, the umbrella of Hashem is one, and when Hashem runs the world, everything is going towards one purpose, one goal, which is the idea of Karban Pesach. So under that, you can have matzah and maror. You have matzah, which tells you that Hashem runs the world with miracles and with freedom, and maror, that sometimes Hashem has to bring us to the world, bitter times and difficult times, but they're all under Hashem's control, and they're all one. And ultimately, that is the message of these three mitzvos, is the underlying message of the Seder. The Seder is supposed to be a night of Emunah, where we grow in our faith in Hashem. Emunah is to understand that the whole world is subject to Hashem's control, Hashem is one, Hashem runs the world in all aspects, in all facets. So these mitzvot speak to that point. Pesach is that Hashem is one, he has a special nation, but he runs the world. Matzah is the freedom, the good times, the miracles, the providence of Hashem, which is precise. And then the maror is that even those bitter times fall in that same category and are also for our benefit. So as one sits back and eats these, right now we only get to eat two of them. Karban Pesach we don't have quite yet. Mirtz Hashem soon. But the matzah and maror we eat every single year. So when you eat these things, don't just eat it. Don't just grumble about it's too much matzah for me, which many of us do. But you know, savor it. Savor the ideas. If we really focus on these paragraphs, understand the ideas of matzah and maror, so then you eat it, the experience becomes, it should be a different experience. And as we said, the matzah picks up on the conversation, as it were. In our minds, at least, we understand what we're doing. So if you start eating your matzah, and you chew, and you picture freedom, and you taste that taste, and I'm tasting the same taste as my ancestors did as they left Egypt, and you picture the miracles of Hashem, so the matzah, it should come out, you know, in your own mind, your own neshama, as you eat the matzah. And the maror as well, as you eat the maror, so we're supposed to relate to the bitter times, which Klal Yisrael has been through, unfortunately, too long, and also relate to the fact those bitter times are good for us, you know, in some way. But you know, let these ideas actually penetrate the mitzvah itself. Often we get to that point of the Seder, and we're starting to get tired, it's been a long Magid, and there is a lot of matzah, and you know, some years it's better than others, and you know, etc. But the experience of Seder is supposed to be, it's supposed to be a full-body experience. Part of the experience of the actual story is tasting these items. So let's take the ideas and kind of imbue them into the items that we're eating in order so that we can get the full body experience and take it in. There's one final point. Go back to the beginning of the Seder. There's two quick points. The Seder begins with Kadesh and Orchatz. You know, Kiddush, you wash your hands. It's pointed out that the symbols we use to describe the Seder, Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, there's 15 steps. Those steps have early sources from Rishonim, maybe even earlier. And each step, kind of, the word we use, that simon, that symbol we use to describe the step, has meaning. So it's interesting to note, the only one that has a vav, the and, is Kadesh Orchatz. It says, make Kiddush and wash. I mean, everything else just stands alone. You know, there's Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, there's no vavs, there's no ands. It could have been all ends. It could have been Kadesh, Orchatz, Vekarpas, Veyachatz, but for some reason, Orchatz has this vav, you know, and wash. So I saw one idea. Again, I don't know if this is the simple understanding, but it's a meaningful understanding. Is that the idea of Kadesh is Hashem showering down upon us the Kedusha, the holiness of the day. In Mitzrayim, we didn't deserve to be saved. It was Hashem who came in and saved us. So it's a night where Hashem showers upon us all sorts of holiness that we don't even deserve, the things that are beyond us. The opportunities of the Seder are things which are very, very big opportunities that we can take advantage of, and that comes from Hashem. But there has to be a response on our end. So if Hashem says, okay, I'm giving you all this Kedusha, we have to immediately do Orchatz. We have to say, well, I'm going to now cleanse myself based on the Kedusha. I mean, the two have to be linked together. If Hashem gives you Kedusha, and you don't act upon it, so you've lost it. You haven't taken advantage of what Hashem showered upon you. But every single time Kedusha comes upon a person, there has to be an immediate response of Orchatz. Okay, there's Kedusha, so I will then cleanse myself. I will wash. And that means I'm going to take advantage of what Hashem showers upon me. The Seder ends. Actually, last night, I gave my regular Monday night shiur, which I gave in White Oak, and I spoke about Nirtza. There was a big focus of it was Nirtza. Nirtza is the end of the Haggadah. And most Haggadah classes will begin in the beginning, never make it to Nirtza. You know? So Nirtza doesn't get discussed too often. But this is sort of one point about Nirtza. The Haggadah ends with Nirtza. Halachically, Nirtza is really nothing, meaning that Nirtza is one of the symbols of the Seder, but there's nothing to do. I mean, according to the strict halacha, nirtza has no actions, no obligations. It's just a state of being, I would describe. You know, nirtza literally means acceptance or pleased. And nirtza is that you've done the entire Seder, and now Hashem is pleased, and you are pleased. Everything we say at nirtza are our customs. These are just piyutim, these are just the poems that we say, songs, but they're all customary to say, but there's no obligation in nirtza. If you were to finish Hallel, drink your last cup of wine, and go to sleep, then your Seder is complete. The Chagadja is a very exciting song. We don't want to miss Enecha Miyodeya. We don't miss those parts. Those parts are very sentimental to us. They mean a lot, and it's definitely the minute to say these things. But essentially, Nirtza doesn't have anything to do. It just is. Nirtza is just. So I would describe Nirtza as a state of being, state of mind, meaning that, let's just take an analogy. If someone is hiking up a mountain, so it's preparation in advance, and then you do the hike, and it's long, and it's hard, and it's difficult, and you have to rest along the way, and finally you get to the top. There's this feeling of accomplishment. There's this feeling that you look at the view, you look down, you say, look what I've done. And you feel pleased, you feel good. That's the feeling of nirtza. It's the feeling where I feel good about what I've done. Pesach's like that. Pesach, there's a long and hard time preparing for Pesach. The Seder's not easy. The Seder, it's late, and it's hard, and if done well, you know, you're putting a lot of effort into the Seder, both physically and spiritually. And when one gets to nirtza, so the temptation is that I'm exhausted and I want to fall asleep. That's the temptation. But if we've done our Seder right, there should be a feeling at the end that I've made it to the top. You know, I've made it to the top of the mountain. You know, I spend weeks preparing, I've cleaned my house, I've destroyed my chametz, I've kashered in my kitchen, I've cooked, I had Erev Pesach, I had the Seder, we had Kadesh, Orchatz, we ate our maror, ate our matzah, we had our Shulchan Aruch, we said hallo, then everything. And finally I get to the top, instead of just saying I'm ready to go to sleep, we're supposed to say nirtza, that you know, what I've done is accepted by Hashem. I am pleased with it. Hashem's gotten nachas out of me. And you show this feeling of accomplishment, this feeling of I've made it to the top of the mountain. That should be the feeling of nirtza. So all the songs of nirtza kind of are supposed to give to us a message of what the Haggadah leaves us with, which that was something I spoke about last night. But just the step of nirtza to me is a very meaningful step, because that should be our feeling when the Seder is over. The feeling should not be I'm exhausted, even though we are. The feeling should be that I'm pleased. I feel good. I feel that Hashem is happy with what I've done. I feel good that I've done, and you know, I feel like I've accomplished a lot over the past, you know, night and the past few weeks. I feel like I'm an accomplished person, and I've grown spiritually. I've made it to the top of the mountain. That's the feeling of Nirtza. So we should all be privileged to have that feeling of Nirtza after our Seder. So I think next Tuesday we'll take off.